Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin. Oh, and we're here again for another week, five and a bit years into this really deeply meaningful for me, Lizzie, conversation. And I'm so glad to be back to do this again, another week to be faithfully keeping up with our practice. And I want to say welcome to everyone who's with us, because I know that this practice isn't just yours and mine. It belongs to many people who listen along and think along and feel along and write back in our Facebook group or by email to us, or talk to friends about it or share it with friends. I know there are lots of people who listen and then share this with other people who they love and get into conversation with them about it. So you and I are not the only conversational space around this. I like to think about circles and circles of conversation, inner conversations and shared conversations that happen from this conversation. So welcome to all of you who are with us in all the different means and forms that you find your way to us, whether you've been with us for 5 years or just been introduced to this somehow. You're really, really welcome to be here. And I also want to say welcome to everyone who in some way is connected with Third Space as well. Third Space is the constellation from which this conversation got born and which nourishes this conversation in so many ways. So if you know about Turning Towards Life but you don't know about Third Space yet, then you can find out more about that and everything we're up to by way of coaching and learning and teaching and studying and deepening and supporting people in flourishing at wearethirdspace.org. That's the place to find out about all of that. And Lizzie, it's really good to be with you.
Thanks, Justin. So on to today's source. So if you're new here, what we do is that we have like a jumping off point for a conversation, which we call a source. And we read it together and then see where the conversation goes. The way that the sources come about is that they come just from our lives and the things we're reading and wondering about and which fall on our desks and into our hearts. And this book that we're going to be reading from today, we're reading an excerpt from a book called Good Inside by a wonderful person called Dr. Becky Kennedy. And the strapline to the book is a practical guide to becoming the parent you want to be. Yes, it's about parenting, but it's also about everything else at the same time, about being a human, about how we grow, how we develop, how to be in relationship with one another. And I'm in the middle of reading it at the moment, and this is kind of at the beginning, this part that we're going to read today. And honestly, I feel like this is required reading for every human. It's so brilliant, and she's so clear and makes it so accessible. So I feel like I'm kind of galloping on the spot about Becky. And I want to thank her, Becky, if you ever get to be listening to this, as we listen to you. She has a great Instagram channel as well. If you look for, I think if you just search for Dr. Becky Kennedy and Good Inside, you'll find everything that you need. She is just completely straightforward and excellent and real, and it's just wonderful. So this is from there, and we're going to read it and see where we come to and what unfolds. So here we go. This idea of multiplicity, the ability to accept multiple realities at once, is critical to healthy relationships. When there are two people in a room, there are also two sets of feelings, thoughts, needs, and perspectives. Our ability to hold on to multiple truths at once, ours and someone else's, allows two people in a relationship to feel seen and feel real, and even if they are in conflict. Multiplicity is what allows two people to get along and feel close. They each know that their experience will be accepted as true and explored as important, even if those experiences are different. Building strong connections relies on the assumption that no one is right in the absolute, because understanding, not convincing, is what makes people feel secure in a relationship. What do I mean by understanding and not convincing? Well, when we seek to understand, we attempt to see and learn more about another person's perspective, feelings, and experience. We essentially say to the person, I'm having one experience and you are having a different experience. I want to get to know what's happening for you. It doesn't mean you agree or comply. These would imply a one thing is true perspective, or that we are wrong or our truth doesn't hold. It means we are willing to put our own experience aside for a moment to get to know someone else's. When we approach someone with the goal of understanding, we accept that there isn't one correct interpretation of a set of facts, but rather multiple experiences and viewpoints. Understanding has one goal, connection. And because connecting to our kids is how they learn to regulate their emotions and feel good inside, understanding will come up over and over again as a goal of communication.
This idea of multiplicity, the ability to accept multiple realities at once, is critical to healthy relationships. When there are two people in a room, there are also two sets of feelings, thoughts, needs, and perspectives. Our ability to hold on to multiple truths at once, ours and someone else's, allows two people in a relationship to feel seen and feel real, even if they're in conflict. Multiplicity is what allows two people to get along and feel close. They each know that their experience will be accepted as true and explored as important, even if those experiences are different. Building strong connections relies on the assumption that no one is right in the absolute, because understanding, not convincing, is what makes people feel secure in a relationship. What do I mean by understanding and not convincing? Well, when we seek to understand, we attempt to see and learn more about another person's perspective, feelings, and experience. We essentially say to the person, I'm having one experience and you are having a different experience. I want to get to know what's happening for you. Doesn't mean you agree or comply. These would apply a one thing is true perspective, or that we're wrong or our truth doesn't hold. It means we're willing to put our own experience aside for a moment to get to know someone else's. When we approach someone with a goal of understanding, we accept that there isn't one correct interpretation of a set of facts, but rather multiple experiences and viewpoints. Understanding has one goal, connection. And because connecting to our kids is how they learn to regulate their emotions and feel good inside, understanding will come up over and over again as a goal of communication.
Thanks, Justin. Oh my goodness, where to begin? I feel like in myself and in lots of the things I see in the world, there is so much convincing going on. Like, you have to come over to here for everything to be okay. You have to agree with me for everything to be okay. And so the kind of landscape that this opens up for me in reading the clarity of Becky's words is really, really massive. And Justin, so many times, you know, we've talked about this multiplicitousness. I think that's one of the invented Lizzie words that have happened over Turning Towards Life's life. And we've talked about this multiplicity inside of us with all the different parts of us that are happening at any one time over however long. And I feel like, I don't know, somehow I don't feel like that's a kind of commonly accepted thing to be okay. Like, there's lots of different things going on at once. It seems like somehow culturally we are kind of drawn down into it. We have to, you know, even like the thought of solving a problem kind of insinuates that there's like one solution to something, or everything gets narrowed down and then there's an action point to take or something. I think we're so oriented around that broadly culturally, that this idea of multiplicity has kind of been silenced or sidelined or something. And so when I encounter it in a kind of wise text like this and hear it and feel it being described so beautifully, I feel like I can feel the ripples. Like, if this was our commonly held understanding of what it meant to be in relationship with other people and what it meant to be in the world, the whole world would be completely different. I mean, if we all were going around seeking to understand rather than to convince in our marriages, in our families, in our communities at work, literally the whole world would be different. And of course, because this is a book about parenting, explicitly about parenting, it's so clear to see where it all begins. And, you know, I was at a school fair yesterday with Vespa, who's three, and we went into this little tent, and a little girl turned around and said, "Don't touch anything. How dare you?" And she was also three. And I thought, my goodness, I wonder how you learned the phrase, "How dare you?" Because it's quite a grown up thing to say. Like, I was thinking, God, daring is quite a big concept. And to say, "How dare," you know, to put that together when you're little is quite a big thing. And of course, it occurred to me that probably someone has said that in her realms and she's heard it and she's repeating it in correct context. And that's what happens. So I feel like this whole matter of writing about parenting that Becky's doing so extraordinarily brilliantly at is a proper game changer. And I don't think it's like one directional. I think it's multi-directional, because even if I didn't have a little person in my house, I was trying to be the version of myself that is best for her. If I wasn't up to that, this book would still be completely irrelevant for me, because if I just took everything and just treated the human beings in my life like this, whether they were little or big or bigger than me or whatever, this is kind of the ramifications of this revolutionary to me. So I'm feeling very kind of excited and enlivened and chomping at the bit for more, because I'm only, I don't know, a quarter of the way through her book. I'll just show you the book if you're watching. I'm just holding up, if you're not watching, I'm holding up a book of the, a version of the book, which is called Good Inside, big yellow book. And so, yeah, I just feel like, I don't know, this feels like a multi-generational backwards, forwards, up and down. Everyone doing this would shift the whole world.
I'm just thinking about, as you're talking about being someone who has parents and who has children, and for all of us, the first one is true in some form. There will have been some adult caregivers. If we've made it into adulthood, in all likelihood, there are going to have been some people around who were the people to hold the world as we grew from very little ones into bigger ones. And that may have been felt safe and nurturing, or maybe may have felt unsafe and unwelcoming, or some combination of the two. But it's a shared human experience has been to come into the world among adults who already were in the world. And I was feeling in me, Lizzie, how when I think about my experiences as a parent, and you'll know this, of course, that my three little ones are no longer little people, but proper big people, very much with their own worlds. When each of them were small, and at the times when I felt afraid or overwhelmed, and mostly if I was afraid, I would be afraid that somehow my efforts at parenting wouldn't work out well. When I was most afraid were the times that I would most get into the mood of, there's no multiplicity here, there's only one truth and it's mine.
Mm.
Because at least then, and it was never true that there was only one truth and it was mine, because it doesn't matter whether a little one is a teeny weeny one pre-language, or a three-year-old, or a seven-year-old, or a 15-year-old. It's always true that there's more than one world going on. And it's always true, like you said, because we've talked about this so many times before, that there were many multiple viewpoints inside me also, which is one of the great pains, I think. Some of the most painful parts of parenting for me have been holding on very, very tightly to one view in me when I knew there were many others competing to get in. Mm-hmm. But that move of asserting that there's only one truth, that it will be this way, the move, the part of me that would say, how dare you touch the things, that I can feel the parts in me that go that way. What they're all really trying to do is to keep the world really, really, really safe by keeping it really stable. There is only one. and it's this one, and anybody who moves out of it is going to be brought back into line inside it. So I really understand, I feel very tender towards the parts of me that do that, that want to stay safe by denying any kind of multiplicity. But what they do is, oh, I know that those parts of me do, is essentially they try to make me into God. You know, in the model of God that many of us inherited, if you grew up in a Western monotheistic culture, whether or not you're a religious person or not, we've all been shaped by this idea of there being one all-powerful, ever-present, omniscient God who knows everything and is right and is in control. And those are the parts of me that were the opposite of this. I have to be God here. And it's one of the reasons why I love this piece so much. And I love what she says about, what Becky says about multiplicity is what allows people to get along and feel close, that they each know that their experience will be accepted as true and explored as important, even if those experiences are different. Because when I've tried to become godlike, which of course is always going to fail, in that kind of power and certainty, what it always undermines is the possibility that somebody else might feel that their experiences are true and important, and that we're brought into safe connection with one another. It's always going to undermine that. And it's not that there aren't times to assert in that way. There are times when we see a terrible injustice happening, for example, is a time to go, I think there's a right thing here, and I might need to stop some harm that's happening to someone else. So there are times, there are moments in our lives when assuming the, I think there's a right thing and I'm going to act on it, really matter. But not when we want others to feel that they are true and important and safe to be with us, and not when we want to build a world that is populated and coloured and deepened and made vibrant by how much difference there is in between us and how much difference there is inside us. And it feels important to me to make that distinction, because I suppose I'm circling round. It's like, of course I've done that, being the one who has the one thing, because I've been afraid.
Mm.
And in order to not do this, I also have to work with the parts of me that feel afraid and make enough safety in myself to go, it's okay. I really can, whether you're 3 or 43, whether you're a partner or a friend or a colleague or someone I've never met or a child of mine or someone else's child or my parents, or to make enough safety in myself to be able to be alongside, that your world may be really, really different to mine, and to treat that as important and not something to run from or to dominate, means cultivating a certain kind of fearlessness, by which I don't mean not feeling afraid. I mean finding a way to relate to our fear so that it takes up its proper size.
Gosh, as you're talking, what's arising to me is that like everybody has the right to feel real. You know, I was thinking of how it would be to be in relationship with you if you were feeling really afraid. And I was thinking, gosh, well, if I had to come all the way to your way, how many parts of me would have to be kind of disbelieved or put to the side in order for me to do that? And I'm a whole world. So for me to cut off pieces of me, and of course I would, because I love you, you know, there's that beautiful dynamic with each other and younger than us ones, and in all directions too, but we love one another. So I'd do that for you, you know. I would say to myself, well, that can't be real, because Justin's saying this is real. And thinking of a world where I had the confidence to be real and honest about my experience, whatever that is, with you, is a completely different thing. So for me to have to edit my life because of the ways that you are saying that things should be, all of the parts of me that have to disappear, or I have to disbelieve, or I have to make unreal, is quite extraordinary. Like, it's like a super reductionist feeling to me if I imagine myself in that kind of relationship. And of course I have those relationships everywhere, but just in this moment I'm being imaginary, because that's not how I experience with you. And then there's the part where, which I think Becky advocates for so beautifully, is I want to get to know what's happening for you. And then when you, as this powerful person in my life, say to me, I want to know about that thing that's happening, rather than put that down and come over here, you're not going to experience that thing. Then I can be curious about that, and I can experience it, and I can feel that that part of me is real and valid, and it has a place to belong. So then I don't have to chop that piece off and put it in some box, but then I can bring it to you and we could be in it together, and it doesn't have to be some, because you're not allowing it to be real turns it into something scary to me as well. Something that if you're scared of that part of me, I'm scared of that part of me as well. So I've got to do something to get that away. But you can't do that with parts. That's not the nature of humanness. You can't just shut something down and then that doesn't exist anymore. Which is also the scary thing. Like, I really understand this part of me too. Like, well, if I open that Pandora's box and I can never close it again. But as we know in our work, you know, like with feelings, a feeling wants to be felt. It's not going to, you know, I've had to learn over and over again, it's not going to have me. It's not going to annihilate me. And of course, we want to protect people around us. We want to save them from things. We've got so many good intentioned motivations, like you said. And that good intention is so important for us to validate in ourselves as well. And if we can regulate ourselves to be inclusive of another person's experience and include our own experience too, i.e. not chop off the part of me that's afraid, I'm never going to go there again. It feels hopeful, and like we can dignify one another rather than reduce one another to something we can handle, or at least we think we can handle. And I don't think that works anyway. You know, I feel like I have enough evidence to show me that the more I try and control something, the more uncontrollable it gets. The more I bury something down, the more powerful it becomes. And, you know, the better I bury a bulb in the garden, the more beautifully it flowers. And I feel like that's the same with humans. It's like the more we push something down or pretend it's not there or try and cut it off or something, it's just not the way it rolls. It's not the way we unfold. And so it will come back somehow to get us in the end. Like it will want to have life. Like life itself wants to be alive. And so to have this and to feel like there's a basis in which we can feel secure in relationship, be able to turn towards things together and have that kind of safety, just feels golden. And I guess what it brings me is a feeling of safety in the world. Like I can be wrong. I can be fallible. I can have parts that are wild and weird and dark. I can disagree with people, and we can still be in connection with one another. It feels so hopeful, and like all kinds of everything becomes possible when this is true, and this is what we practice.
So much in what you're saying. I was feeling into myself as you were talking about what we push down, what we push away in ourselves lives on in some way. And I found it very helpful to think of, to shift my language a little bit, because there are some ways of thinking about human psychology that talk about conscious and unconscious things and things getting pushed down into the unconscious, which makes them sound like they're not alive anymore. They're unconscious down there. Actually, I think what we push away in us remains vibrantly conscious. It just might be out of view from the something that's central in us that's called ourselves. So it lives on in very, so like you say, when we push something away in ourselves or in another person, when we make it unsafe for that something to have a place, you can bet that it's living on in some way and not being supported and not taking up its proper place in the family of, you know, the family system inside us that we all are. So it really matters. It matters with the people we love. It matters with our children. It matters with our colleagues. It matters in the kind of culture we make, all of that. But then the thought that I had, Lizzie, you spoke so beautifully about how we make it unsafe for one another or unsafe for ourselves to bring things. And you were saying if you were imagining having to cut off parts of you in order to come over to where I am because you love me and so you would do that. I think it's really important to see that that can be at the root of all of this trouble. So I could feel in me that there was a way that I learned, maybe because of the kind of temperament I already had when I got born, maybe because of the kind of kind family system I got born into, maybe because of the education experiences I had. My internal system, I think, took on the belief that if I wasn't in agreement with other people, it would be very unsafe. But that had this a really interesting consequence. So one consequence would be that I would really easily do what you said, just cut off parts of myself in order to fit in with other people that I cared about or was afraid of, whatever. But the other place it left me was, if somebody else disagrees with me, I'm unsafe. So I better make sure that they agree with, if I'm going to really think something strongly and not give up on myself, the only alternative is to make you agree with me and make you put away all the parts of you. So I would happily play my part, not happily, but willingly, habitually play my part in making sure that you only said things that I could hear anyone around me, because I would feel, it would feel so unsafe to be in this multiplicity that Becky's talking about, that a real multiplicity allows for you and I having really different experiences.
Yeah.
And that not meaning that you are having a different experience does not make my experience wrong or untrue. Mm-hmm. That was the thing that was so frightening for me. If I really hear what you have to say, I might be made wrong and that would feel terribly unsafe. So I'd better make sure that your experience is the same as mine. And I, you know, I did that for years. I probably still do it now and again now, but I certainly was like the guiding principle was, my work is to make sure that either my experience is the same as yours, or depending upon the circumstance, to make sure your experience is the same as mine. And it really is revolutionary to consider that there might be multiplicity, and that when we want to make relationship, when we want to make safe, and we want to make community, that we have to have, I've used this phrase before, like a many-chambered heart, and we have to know that other people have a many-chambered heart. And one of the difficulties in this is that sometimes even our commitment to multiplicity can be a way of shutting other people down. So you know, it's possible to take even this and make it into something really just another version of the same thing, which is, unless you agree with my version of how multiplicity should be. So I have to, in order to do this, I have to be able to listen to you while you tell me that I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I demand that you never tell me that I'm wrong because we've all got different experiences, I immediately deny the dignity of your own experience of being in conversation with me. So it's not, I just really want to honor that none of this is simple, and none of it can be made into a rule, because the act of really getting close to one another so that we know that our experience will be accepted and just true and explored is important, is always a living commitment. It's not a, can never be reducible to rules, because I'm always going to come up against that in you and me, you and that in me, that can't be simplified. So we have to be really committed to it. I mean, I think we should be. I think it's right. I think it's excellent to be that. But it really is, I suppose I don't want to read this like some simplistic response to the difficulties that we get in. It's also hard to stay in this,
yeah,
to stay loving in the midst of it.
Absolutely. But it's also seems to me like it's just a different kind of hard. Like it, when you were talking, I was thinking, my God, it's really hard to convince everybody to come my way. And I felt myself relaxing, like, oh, I haven't got to have a problem with other people's experiences. Like, I haven't got to have a problem with other people's viewpoints anymore. I was thinking, oh, how wonderful. Like, I can just let them have whatever opinions they have, whatever experience that they are expressing is, like, I don't have to turn someone. I can feel how relieving that is and how hard work that is. And I also know it's hard work to, as you said, like, be in this lovingness, because it's also very unfamiliar territory. I think familiar territory to me is trying to have things the way I think they should be. Unfamiliar to me is, let's see what's real for you and let that be okay. And of course, there's times when, you know, I'm just thinking super practically of, like, we have to get in the car because we've got to pick one of the children up from school and it's 2 o'clock and we need to be there by 2:30, you know. And I think that's the beauty of this, as Dr. Becky's work unfolds, you can still keep moving in the direction of what needs to happen, but validating and loving along the way. You know, there's things about safety, of course, when we're parenting that really matter, that are included in all of this. But in the kind of the general human relationships, there's also things that are just not okay, you know, like violence and abuse, of course. And I think that's why this feels so important to me, because in a way, all of that comes from where this isn't practiced in the origins of our lives, like where we have no blueprint, where we have no understanding how not to be violent. You know, all we can do is perpetuate the thing that was given to us. So I can feel the power of addressing this explicitly as a parenting topic, even though, of course, it applies to all of us. But I feel very, I feel like parenting is one of those places, Justin, where you can't really say much to anyone about anything because it's so delicate and sensitive, and we love each other, we love our children so much that if anybody says anything to us, it's like being stabbed or something. And if anybody points out that actually maybe that's a bit mean what you just said there, or do you think you could do that differently, it's like so quick, the story, I'm trying my best, do you understand how hard this is? Is it like, it's so fraught, the world of parenting these days, just kind of culturally. And I notice that, you know, truthfully, I notice it because mostly people are complaining about their children all the time. Mostly people, I think, because we're in a convincing way, our children aren't being convinced. So it's annoying. And so I notice it. And, I, you know, it's a combination of things. Like, I think Vespa's just a wonderful, I don't know, quite easy child, maybe. But also, I do my best not to try and convince her of anything. I want her to be herself. I want her to be who she was born to be. Goodness knows what on earth that is. You know, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And so I think because I'm not trying to convince her all the time, I find it very difficult to participate in lots of conversations with other parents because I'm not complaining about her. And so I can feel the kind of weight of being kind of alien as well, in the normal cultural realms of what people say about their children. Somebody said yesterday, oh my God, a train ride is so luxurious without any children. And I thought, oh my God, I love train rides with children. Like, they're the ones who show me how to be excited about life and how to kind of be present to the beauty of moving landscape and what the how the toilet works and how miraculous is even toilet on a train, for goodness sake. So anyway, that's the way I receive the kind of cultural norm, is by being a bit of a feeling, I was going to say feeling excluded, but I don't feel excluded because I don't want to be complaining all the time, but I can feel the kind of the way of the world generally is a world of kind of complaint and difficulty. And I really wonder about the power of this work for all of us to kind of, I don't know, change the story somehow, like be in a different story about who people are, who our children are, so that we can actually enjoy being parents as well. Like we can actually participate in a way that's curious and open and wondering and faithful and processing, as you said, our own fears, so that we can be in it in a way that grows us rather than confirms all of our habitual patterns of controlling and convincing and trying to reduce everything so that we can feel safe.
It's me wondering how we, this is, of course, this is about parenting, but it's about every other relationship as well. How we really cultivate a kind of a relaxing of our, that in us which is fundamentalist. So when I say fundamentalist, I mean that in us which will claim that there's only one kind of truth, there's only one interpretation of what's going on, which includes the fundamentalism of everybody's got kind of truth. So I say it this way because, you know, sometimes we need to get in the car to pick up someone else. And the truth may be that you don't want to come in the car, but the truth is you need to come in the car.
Yeah.
Because the truth is somebody else is suffering elsewhere because they're going to stand on the street without anyone. So it has to include, so the sort of the inclusion of multiplicity that's in here has to include that which is true and definite. Like we have to be able to hold both together. But the question is, so do we abandon one or the other? So one mistake we make is to abandon one together. There's only multiplicity and there's never any truth, which undoes everything, all the commitments that we stand on. Or you go, there's only a kind of truth and it's mine and you will get in line with my truth and there's no multiplicity. Your job is to come to my world. Or what we do is we hold both, they're both, we hold both together and move between them, knowing that sort of a declaration of truth is one part of multiplicity and there's time to sort of move between the two. And I really wonder about in the wider context where we're in a time of great change in the world. Lots and lots of things are undoing and remaking themselves in ways that we don't yet understand. Maybe many things that we've relied upon are ending, and maybe many things that we could rely upon are being made again anew. And the question is, will we make them in life-giving ways that have people flourish, or will we clamp down on ourselves because we're afraid and clamp down on one another because we're afraid? So I when I read this and we get into this conversation, I've sort of suddenly blown open from the sort of the micro interpersonal of our partnerships and our family systems and our children and our parents and our communities into something much, 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 much bigger, which is, can we, instead of when we feel afraid that we don't know what's changing and how it's changing, can we be all the ways that you've just been talking about and reach one another and allow what's being born? So really sort of the implication of Dr. Becky's words is that we get to allow what's being born in one another a chance to have some air. Not everything that gets born in us is good. Not everything that's born in us will help. So it's not like everything that gets born in us should be fed and fed and fed and fed, because some of the things that get born in us really hurt us and hurt other people. But can we give what's here a chance to be known and to be understood and to find its right place? I think that that's what's at stake, actually. And it's at stake as those of us who get, you know, who get the chance to raise a new generation into the world, which some people get a chance to do and some people choose to do and some people don't choose to, you know, but also how we raise one another.
Mm.
As we go.
Yeah. I think this is really beautiful conversation, Justin. And I certainly feel a kind of life being breathed into me through it. And I want to just appreciate Dr. Becky Kennedy again of doing the brave work of actually talking about something that people. And one thing I want to say about this as well is that she's so respectful and amazing at also putting the parent as the one who's good inside, So if anybody is a parent and is considering reading it and feels resistance or like, oh no, I'm going to be told all the stuff I can't do or can do or whatever, there's such kindness towards the parents. It's not like you have to be this way to raise healthy children. And if you can't be that way, there's something wrong with you or something. It's not that. She's so inclusive of the experience of being a parent. And I think she has three children herself. So she's dealing with managing their relationships all the time. And so, yeah, it's profoundly kind and good on all the different levels, upwards and downwards. And I want to just say, Justin, how grateful I am to you for, well, I think having been extraordinarily multiplicitous with your children as well. Like I've seen it over the years of just allowing them to be themselves and not trying to shove them down a certain way of being or doing or whatever. I love that. I love how different your children are to one another as well, which is kind of an expression of that in some way. So I just want to say thank you for the conversation. And it's a conversation I really want to be having. And also it's very tender and can feel it in myself even as we're talking, you know, not wanting to alienate anybody, or it's just such a delicate territory. So I really appreciate that we're just beginning in something in this conversation and hopefully planting some seeds. And if anybody wants resources about parenting, that book is amazing. So I think that's our time that we should end, Justin. And thank you again to everybody for being here. Thank you for this source. Thank you to Becky. Thank you to you, Justin. And we'll be back next week with some other kind of beauty.
Thanks, Lizzie. Thanks, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.